Facebook.com/KPFT Houston. This is commercial free, listener sponsored Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston.
Padre Egberto Willis is on engineering. He has his own show Thursdays at 3 p.m. Politics Done Right. Here, as I often say, we do politics okay and occasionally not at all. And tonight, we're not doing politics at all. What we are doing is information for first-time homebuyers or people that have previously owned a home who might feel shut out of the market. This is not one of those get-rich-quick on real estate shows. This is for folks who want a home. KPFT is a community radio station. Community is largely the people who live here, and people who live here often want homes that they own, and we're going to talk about how you might accomplish that. And if you have credit problems, we're going to talk about how you might help to improve your situation there as well. My guest today is Brad Stevens. He is a realtor and a licensed real estate broker. He's been a landlord, a property manager, listing agent, buyer's agent, and done rehabbing of older properties. But he started with a focus on first-time homebuyers. He has guided clients through the home buying process. Even if they thought they may not have been able to purchase a dream home without first learning about some of the lesser-known advantages, actual advantages of being a first-time homebuyer from builders, from mortgage companies, from banks, and those two things are not necessarily the same, from the IRS, and occasionally even from credit bureaus. So, Brad, your company is, I need to mention this, is newhomeprograms.com. And
that's right.
Where should people start? If it may be a young person, a young couple, it may be an older couple buying their first home, or someone maybe who has lost their home previously and is looking to get back into the home buying market. So where should these people begin?
The first suggestion I have is do not get frustrated with the process, because it can
be gotten very tough.
It's a very emotional process, especially if you feel like you're starting off at a disadvantage right from the get-go. There's a lot of folks that we've worked with who have had credit that has buried them, that they've wanted to bury their heads in the sand, not wanting to face it. But there's plenty of opportunities. Oftentimes there's, I don't want to say quick fixes, but there's advice that can be provided. As a society, Americans are not educated on what goes into credit scoring.
I would go a little further and say Americans are not educated on many things, credit scoring being just one of them. So,
but that puts consumers, especially consumers who will say aren't necessarily of the middle or upper class, at a huge disadvantage when they don't know what goes into the credit scoring. And there's opportunities out there provided from organizations in Texas that can get you into a home for very few dollars, truly.
We will be taking phone calls. You will be able to talk to Brad and ask him some questions. The phone number is 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. So who is considered a first-time home buyer? And it's actually a very important thing to know, because there are tax benefits and tax credits, and you might get advantages in your application process. So who exactly is a first-time home buyer? As silly as that question may sound.
Well, it is a silly question, but at the same time, it's not, because a first-time home buyer is, number one, somebody who has never owned a home before or a piece of real estate. Number two.
So a land, a house, a condo, never owned where you lived or
right.
owned other real estate.
Correct. Because that can put you, even if you have an investment property, that can disqualify you from the advantages of a first-time home buyer in some instances. But why it's not a silly question is this. If you have not owned a home in the last 3 years, the clock restarts. And
really?
You become a first-time home buyer again.
That's important. So if you had a home, perhaps you were forced to sell it, not necessarily in a foreclosure, but just because you couldn't make the payments, or you had to move, maybe change jobs, change cities, change areas of town. If it's been 3 years since that property was closed, you can qualify as a first-time home buyer again.
Yes.
Cool.
So it doesn't matter what age you are. And I've worked with first-time home buyers who are grandmothers. And let me tell you how appreciative they are. And that's one of the joys, great joys, of working with first-time home buyers is the appreciation that they show. And, you know, there's a lot of folks out there who are listening, probably, you know, thinking, wow, well, you know, what does it take to, you know, get into a home now? And you probably have friends, too, who are in the same boat. So, you know, let them know. You have to listen in right quick, and they'll get a great education on first-time home buyers.
There are a lot of different loans that are available. So there are loans that require 20% down, 25% down. There are loans you can get into, especially if you're a veteran, for zero down. If you have an income qualification, you can get an FHA loan, which is what, like 5% down?
3.5.
3.5.
Mm-hmm.
You sometimes get a better interest rate depending on your particular status.
Mm-hmm. With conventional loans, absolutely.
So for the average first-time home buyer, where would they go to find what might be the best loan package, we'll call it, for them?
Mm-hmm. Some of the programs that are provided through organizations in Texas, I'm going to mention one of them that's local here in Houston, but they have statewide programs. So it doesn't matter where in the state of Texas you're living. It's Southeast Texas Housing, or SETH, if you want to call it by name. But they've got a grant that's available. And then there's also something called, and this is provided through both SETH and the state of Texas. It is called MCC program. And that MCC program allows...
M as in Michael?
M as in Michael, yeah.
Funny how I come up with that first.
But the program benefits, it's this. If you are a first-time home buyer, the benefits the next year that you... or will stay the first year that you own that home... interest that you're paying towards that, you can get up to, and this is for the life of the loan. You have to understand that. So not just the first year, the second year, as long as you own that home, you're going to get up to
a fixed rate. But you're
well,
saying that
this is a credit. This is a tax credit that you get.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You really an annual tax credit
for the life of your up to $2,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
I thought it was a one-time thing.
Nope. Not this case.
Now, do we need to talk about the difference between a tax credit and a tax deduction? Because some people may not be clear on that.
No, I'm not an accountant, but...
All right. Well, I can tell them if you don't want to.
The tax credit is money in your pocket.
It's the actual amount.
Yeah, it's hard money that you save versus a tax deduction, which is a write-off.
It applies against your income.
Exactly.
It just reduces your income taxable amount.
Yeah, so for a charitable... lot of donations, those things
right.
are write-offs.
So
not
for a lot of
credits.
People, if you take a $2,000 deduction, you might just ballpark, you might get 20 cents on the dollar
right.
as a reduction in your taxes, depending on the deduction. Whereas a $2,000 tax credit actually increases your tax return, your tax refund
Yes.
By literally $2,000. That's the difference between a credit and a deduction.
Yes. And also, it can be looked at it this way. If you divide that $2,000 by 12 months, that's $167 per month more in affordability. So that's more every month you can spend on your home.
In a starter home, that could be 10% of your mortgage payment
every
month.
In this market, with the interest rates there are, it's about $20,000 more. So that can bump you up from $130,000 home to $150,000 home.
Now, that actually brings up another question. You know, there's a difference between being able to easily afford the house you want to buy versus being house poor, versus being house broke.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes whenever you shop for a house, it's almost like a given. You'll probably end up spending $50,000 more than you expected. It just seems to be the way it works. But sometimes you're better off buying a less expensive house that leaves you with a little bit more income. That breathing space means a lot. On the third hand, though, while that mortgage payment may seem like a struggle for the first few years, when rents begin going higher than your mortgage payment, you start to breathe a whole lot easier.
Oh, yes. And
and rents are always increasing.
Yeah, one aspect of home ownership that especially first-time home buyers don't take into consideration when they're buying are the tax incentives. So you are able to write off those property taxes that you're paying, the interest that you're paying on that home versus rent. So if you're paying $1,000 in rent versus a $1,000 mortgage payment, you realize so many more benefits with that $1,000 you're paying towards your home.
You suddenly become a tax itemizer.
And also, hopefully, and especially we've seen this in the Houston market and throughout Texas, is the appreciation of your home. So if you see I'm just going to use round numbers on $100,000 home, if you see appreciation of 2-3% per year, that's an extra $200 to $300 per month.
It can be 4 to 6 times the interest you're getting on that same money in the bank, except, as they sometimes say, you're leveraging it because you're getting that appreciation on the whole house, mm-hmm. not just your down payment.
Exactly. So you're using the bank's money to work for you.
But it is really important that we're not looking at this as some kind of get rich quick thing. You know, we're looking. What we want to talk about is how you can best put yourself in a place that you own
right.
so that you can realize both the pride and the benefits and the responsibilities of home ownership.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I want to emphasize, having looked at a lot of the real estate in Houston, there are a lot of really nice old neighborhoods, where the houses are really pretty affordable. I mean, we're talking under $100,000.
There are
nice neighborhoods. They might be like a 3-bedroom, 1-bath or a 3-bedroom, 2-bath. They may have a 1-car garage or a garage may have been converted. But nice places to live that a lot of people can afford. They may not know that properties like that exist. You have to really, a realtor
yes.
can be your greatest asset, a good realtor. Now, it's important to understand something about a realtor. Pretty much every realtor is paid by the seller.
True.
So even your realtor, your so-called buying agent, on the one hand, you feel like they're working for you, and they may feel like they're working for you, but it is important to always remember that their pay comes always from the seller. So it becomes very tricky for them in terms of the ethics of the situation. How is that dealt with?
Well, understand that working with the buyers, you know, the buyers, we don't ask any compensation at all from them. Our job is not done until you get the keys to your home.
How do you deal with the ethical contradiction of the fact that your pay comes from the seller even when you're working with the buyer?
Huh. that's not even anything I really
I mean, it's consider. Good that I mean, you it's... never thought about it because that means you're very client focused.
Yeah.
But I mean, I have spoken with realtors, and for some realtors, they've actually had me sign something saying you understand that we are actually being paid by the seller, and essentially anything you say may be used against you in a court of law, that kind of thing.
You know, on the other side, when you're representing the seller, that's where a lot of conflict of interest can come in because, you know, your compensation adjusts slightly with thousands of dollars of potential income to them. But, you know, on the buyer side, you know, there's you just want to make sure that you're showing them the home that is right for them. You don't want to show them a $200,000 home when they are asking for that monthly payment to be $1,300 per month.
You have to be honest.
What you're
actually exhibiting is the importance of interviewing your realtors, deciding which realtor is right for you. Realtors are not a commodity. Realtors are individuals who do their jobs in personalized ways, who have personalized perspectives, who may have a personal set of ethics that may be stronger or weaker than perhaps what the industry requires. So interviewing your realtor is a really, really important aspect of this process, finding someone you feel you can trust to protect your interests.
True. And part of those interests is aligning the clients, the buyers, with the correct lenders.
Just let me take a moment here. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. We are talking about first-time home ownership. And my guest is Brad Stevens. He is a licensed realtor and real estate broker, and he's worked in real estate. How long have you been in real estate?
8.5 years now.
8.5 years. And his company is newhomeprograms.com. Okay, you were talking about lenders, and it's something that I touched on earlier on the show. And by the way, you can call with questions, 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. So lenders,
it's very important that your realtor aligns themselves with the right lenders, because there's big box lenders, and then there's other banks.
Not all lenders are banks.
Not all banks are good lenders. That's absolutely true. Not all lenders are good lenders. So there's specific lenders. I kind of mentioned those programs that offer first-time home buyer programs. Not all lenders offer those programs. So if you go walking into your local branch of your XYZ big box bank and say, hey, I think that I qualify for the MCC program, they might look at you a little funny and say, well, we can offer you something else maybe. But you have to align yourself with those realtors who have the resources and the knowledge of these programs, and then also the lenders as well, because there's just some absolutely outstanding lenders out there who can get the job done for folks, give them the guidance, give them the understanding of what they need to do to clean anything up with pre-approval. And I'll just quick touch on the basics for what you're looking at for a pre-approval on an FHA loan. You want to have a 640 credit score.
Or better. What's the top credit score? I think it's like 850 now. They adjusted the scale.
There's a top credit score, but when I'm talking to clients, I tell them credit is kind of like a vision, where people think the 2020 vision is perfect, but it's not. If you had perfect vision, you could look at the moon and be able to see all the craters on there and all the rocks. You'd be able to see from here to infinity. Not possible. Simply because you're breathing and you have a heartbeat, you can't have perfect credit. There's no such thing. Anybody who has 800 credit or above is exceptional. If you have 700 credit or above, you're above average. You're above average, but 640 is rarely where you want to be and above for FHA loan. You have to have the proper debt to income ratio. You want to make sure that DTI is debt to income ratio. So you'll hear lenders using that acronym. And then also there's specific items that they'll look for on credit reports as well. You want to make sure you've had two lines of credit that have been open for 12 months or longer in good standing. Good standing means you haven't had any 30-day lates or greater.
Can I make one comment on
that? Absolutely.
A lot of young people, when they apply for their first credit cards, and I know I was under this misapprehension when I was young, they are under the impression that if they revolve their charges, the banks see them as better customers because they're paying interest to the banks and the banks are making money.
Oh, yes.
And, I mean, on one level that's true, but from a credit score perspective, you're better off paying your cards off at the end of each month
in
full.
Absolutely.
Because what that tells them, if you're revolving your charges, it tells them that you're not quite making enough.
Mm-hmm.
But you're a good customer because you're paying the money. On the other hand, if you're paying your credit card in full at the end of every month, what you're telling them is, I got more money than I need credit, and you can give me more credit because I've got money that I'm not using yet.
Correct.
So always pay your credit cards in full at the end of the month. Revolve them only if you absolutely must.
Yes, because you are making the credit card companies wealthy. You know, a lot of folks out there who are paying 15-20%. And they
25%.
They love that misconception that you just need to pay the minimum balance because they are going to be making all that money. And even if you only have $300, $400 outstanding, that adds up tremendously over 1 year. The other misconception is that they want you to run up your credit card to the max every month, then pay it down. If somebody pulls your credit when you have a very high balance on any of your credit cards, your credit score is going to drop. So, as Mike was saying, you want to have all your debts paid off. You don't want to have that debt revolving, you know, going month to month to month with high balances. There's five basic factors of credit scoring. And you can go to our website just for reference. And also FICO.com is an educational resource.
FICO.com.
Correct. The golden rule of credit is pay your bills on time.
Now, I'll
put
give
it
you
on
an example.
Auto debit, put on auto payment. You can do it either from your side at the bank or have the credit card company initiate it. So at least you make the minimum payment, if not, pay it in full.
Yeah, I actually have always set my credit cards, A, so that I remember I have to check the balance on that card because I have more than one and it gets complicated. And the other is I'll set like an automatic payment of $50 or $100 or $200, depending on what I normally do with that card.
Mm-hmm.
So if for some reason I accidentally forget to change the number to the actual payment that's due, I will pay at least as much as the minimum payment, if not more. So at least that payment got in.
Mm-hmm.
And then as soon as I notice that, I'll pay off that balance because, you know, interest charges.
Correct.
I think it's important that people also understand that they can almost immediately improve their credit scores doing small things. I'll give you one really interesting example. I ran across someone recently who had a ding on their credit because they had gotten a DVR from AT&T UVerse.
Right.
And for some reason, they'd never actually even opened the box. They still had the DVR, but they had never returned it. Because they simply got the DVR, they just figured, okay, it's mine. But actually, it was still owned by AT&T,
mm-hmm,
and it was shown as an unpaid debt.
Mm-hmm.
Unpaid debt. So all they had to do to straighten that out was contact AT&T and say, I'm sorry, I've got your DVR. I forgot to give it back. And at least then it will show late payment, but paid.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's a small thing that you can do that will improve your credit report just a little. Automatically, without your having had to do anything special about your spending habits.
Yes. And there's a lot of, you know, going back towards the beginning of the show, we were talking about kind of those folks who feel like they're in a desperate situation. Where you want to start there to build your credits, we always recommend get a secured credit card.
At a minimum.
At a minimum, yeah. A secured credit card. Better is even to get two secured credit cards.
Now, I'm going to interrupt with that for a moment. If you have a checking account, and really underbanking is a topic I want to get to at some point. I need to find someone I can talk to knowledgeably about it. But if you have a checking account, the first place to apply for a credit card is the bank where you have that checking account.
Correct. Even if
they'll only give you a credit line of a couple of $100 because they figure you've got money in your checking account, the fact that it's an unsecured credit card of any kind that you then use and pay in full at the end of the month, and every 6 months they'll probably offer you a little bit of a credit line increase if you pay it off regularly.
Mm-hmm.
That's one way that you can build credit, and sometimes the simplest way to start.
Right.
Now, a secured credit card has a place in this.
Yeah, and that's a lot of times, and this is where some of the frustration sets in, is that people will try to obtain an unsecured credit card, and they will get declined. And that's simply because they're not going to take that risk with the unsecured credit line to folks who have no credit or very low credit.
And there's a big difference between poor credit and no credit. Mm-hmm. There are people out there who have dealt in cash so much of their lives that they're not a bad risk because they're bad credit.
That's
they're a bad
true.
Risk because they're unknown.
Yeah.
So you have to begin somewhere.
Exactly. And so that's the building of the process, because if banks or a lender, if they see you that you can't be responsible with $500 of credit, why would they ever extend you $150,000 of credit? And so with the secured credit cards, they report the same as an unsecured credit card, so you don't get hit there. And it is the fastest way to build credit is with a credit card. It's kind of like I explain to folks that if you look at buying a home or improving your credit, you're in a boat and you want to get somewhere. You want to get there as fast as you can. You have collections. You may have some late pays, and those are like anchors. They're holding you down. They're holding you in place. So what you want to do is pull up those anchors if possible. That means dispute some of these items that are derogatories on your account, get rid of some of the collections. Sometimes you negotiate payoffs. You have to get rid of all your judgments.
Which do ding your credit, but it's not as bad as a non-payment.
Correct. And that's a little touchy because some of the older collections, sometimes you really don't want to even touch those, no matter how much they're for. But when you get credit cards, it's like raising these huge sales. So if you get one credit card, you throw up a big sale. You get another secured credit card, you throw up another big sale. I've pulled hundreds and hundreds of credit reports, and I've only seen one credit score that's been above 700 who did not have a credit card.
I will also say this. There's a. I think in many people's minds, they may be confused as to the difference between a debit card and a secured credit card.
Yeah.
Because both of them require money on account.
That's true.
But they're not the same at all in terms of how a credit bureau sees them.
Yeah. And another confusing type of card is the prepaid card. There's prepaid Visa cards. There's prepaid MasterCards. They
Poor
do not report.
Poor people get scammed more often than anybody. It's really sad.
They do not report to the credit bureaus. Also, Mike was talking about AT&T, some of the utilities out there. Yeah, you're paying utilities on time, your electric bill, your gas bill, your phone bill. They do not report positively to the credit bureaus. They don't report at all. But if you don't pay them, guess what happens?
Then
you get turned into the collection guy. And you start getting the nasty notices in the mail, which now you feel like you're walking on eggs whenever you want to open up an account somewhere.
Okay, you're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. My engineer is Egberto Willis, who has his show Thursdays from 3 to 4 p.m., Politics Done Right. We do have open lines. We will take phone calls. Sorry, Myron, you can call back. I didn't mean to leave you waiting. 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. We're talking about home buying, specifically first-time home buying. We're also drifting somewhat into things like credit and loans, which are all sort of relevant. My guest is Brad Stevens. He's a licensed realtor and a licensed real estate broker who's been in the business for about 8.5 years. His company is newhomeprograms.com, and we're talking about ways you may not be aware of that can help you to buy a home. Almost regardless of income level, of course, within reason, but people that may think that they cannot afford a home that will find that there are subsidy programs, there are IRS tax credits as well as tax deductions, that there are specific loan programs that require little or nothing down. So it really, if you have a desire for a home, what we're talking about is there are ways that you may be able to get into a home that you own that you may not be aware of. So we were talking about credit. We were talking about loans. How do you begin to calculate how much you can afford to pay if you're in the market for a home?
Well, what you want to do is reach out to a knowledgeable realtor or a reliable lender. because what they will do is initially you'll fill out a pre-qualification form with all of your information, including your Social Security number, your gross income, and from there they will calculate your DTI, and they'll also look at
debt
your full credit report. And from there they will be able to estimate your maximum loan amount and therefore your purchase price.
Okay, I'm going to interrupt you because Myron called back. So I figure if Myron has a question he's willing to call back for, then let's talk to him. Myron, can we get you on the air? Hold on. We've suddenly the lines got very busy and Egberto is trying. There we go. Myron, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, you're on the air. What do you got tonight? What do you want to ask?
I've heard that if you have like several credit cards and you pay them down or you never use them a lot, that could actually negatively affect your credit score. Is that true?
That's an interesting question, and it's confusing.
It is confusing. My clients, I recommend with any open credit cards that they do have to use them, even if it's an infrequent basis. You know, sometimes there's department store cards. You're not going to be shopping at that same department store month after month. But make that purchase, pay it off in full, and then use it another 3 or 4 months.
Sometimes you can use like a Target card. You can charge it. They give you 5% off your purchase. You can go right to customer service and pay the bill.
Mm-hmm.
So it's paid in full. But, I mean, it gets very, very tricky because they used to tell you many, many years ago that if you don't use a credit card, you're better off closing the account. And somewhere over time, that has changed. So you talk debt-to-income ratio. Debt can also be seen as potential debt. Mm-hmm. If you have $100,000 in credit lines and you're only using $5,000, for weird reasons, which only God can explain, they don't see that as you're a huge risk that you might suddenly go out and charge $100,000. They see you as a responsible borrower because you're only using 5% of your available credit.
Exactly.
It makes no real sense to a normal human being, but that's kind of how it works.
And that's the folks who have high 700s and even 800 credit scores, oftentimes I see them having 5, 6, 7 credit cards. And trust me, they are not using all those credit cards.
And they keep throwing more credit lines at you. It's crazy.
And that's true.
It's insane.
But then you look at their available credit. They may have $50,000, $60,000 of available credit just with these credit cards alone. And because they've proven that they're responsible with their money, that is why they're rewarded with these high credit scores. And if you do have an open credit card, you know, sometimes folks have this philosophy. Well, I have a credit limit of $5,000 on there. I never go above $1,000, though. So I'm going to drop it down to, you know, $1,500. I'm going to call them, reduce my credit limit. They're shooting themselves in the foot by doing that.
Yeah, that actually hurts you. You don't want to do that.
Because all of a sudden, your ratio as far as your maximum that you can charge up there versus what you actually have goes from maybe 10% to more than 50%. And the more you have leveraged, the lower your credit scores.
Now, you don't want to go crazy now and start applying for credit cards all over the place because that doesn't look good either. Every time you apply, it's a ding. And the ding goes away over time.
Mm-hmm.
I think 6 months, a credit app.
Yeah, 120 days usually.
Something like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe if you're young and you're trying to build a credit history, maybe apply for a credit card every year,
mm-hmm.
9 months. You can get away with 6 months. But the idea is apply for credit you think you need.
Yes, and that's why you also want to initially apply for the secured credit card options if you have bad credit or no credit at all, because your likelihood of getting approved for an unsecured credit card is very low, and that's going to be a small ding on your credit right there.
So, I mean, there are a lot of different paths to take. Myron, did we answer your question?
Yes. I have one more if there's time.
Okay.
All right. What if you have someone that is willing to rent from you? Say you have a two-bath townhome, and, you know, you have a good friend with a good job, and he's willing to pitch in, not as an owner, but just as someone who...
Like a roommate.
With you. Is there any way possible that that commitment could help you qualify for more?
I would think that if you have a lease with that person that you can present to a lender, that qualifies then as income.
Okay, so you'd have to...
I'm going to let Brad confirm that for me.
I think you have a two-bedroom, two-bath townhome, Myron. You know, as far as roommate situations...
I think a lease makes all the difference.
Yeah, I would have something in writing with that person. Now, the thing is, if you are applying to buy a home and you're saying, hey, I'm going to have a roommate as well, they're not going to count any kind of income.
Okay.
Yeah. You'd want to do in that case, if you do need help, sometimes, especially with the appreciation that we've had in the Houston market, where, you know, the $100,000 home from 3 years ago is now $130,000 or $140,000. Sometimes people will ask a relative or a close friend for help in the form of a cosigner, and that's perfectly fine. You know, just as long as they have great credit and because they're also going to look at their debt-to-income ratio as well.
Also understand that when you ask someone to be a cosigner, that's a real serious obligation on their part.
And that it is.
And there are a lot of people that have been seriously, seriously burned by cosigning. So I would try to avoid asking that favor, both because I think people need to try to stand on their own two feet. Not that I never get money from parents, mind you. I do. But there's a difference, I think, between... Even a parent, let's say, there's a difference between them writing you a check for $10,000 for a down payment versus them co-signing the mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
There's a huge difference there. And one is a much, much bigger liability for them than simply giving you a cash one-time gift.
Right. And sometimes that co-signer, they may not own a home right now. But then all of a sudden, a year, 2 years down the road, they're going to want to own a home. But now... They have this huge monthly obligation.
It's their loan.
Hitting them.
Yeah, it's their loan, if they're not paying a dime. And if they want to buy a car, they'll pay a higher interest rate because they've got this outstanding loan. They're a higher risk. So getting someone to co-sign, I'm not saying you shouldn't, but it's an enormous responsibility for both parties in that contract.
Yes, and that's why you really want to look at some of the programs that are out there to assist home buyers. Because that can help you with money up to 5% down. And we were talking about an FHA loan. You know, 3.5% down, that leaves an extra 1.5% to go towards closing costs.
3.5.
Okay. I appreciate your call, Myron. Hope we answered your questions, and have a great day. And oops, I think we accidentally hung up on somebody. Oh, somebody dropped off. Call back, because now we have an open line, 713-526-5738. Our next caller is Debbie. Debbie, how you doing tonight? You're on the air.
Hi, I was just listening in, and you answered my questions.
Oh, well, I appreciate your hanging on long enough to tell us we answered your questions.
Yeah, I had two questions, but you answered the first one. And, you know, I recently tried to get a house. I had to move in an apartment because my credit, the debt ratio was too high. So what I decided to do was get my credit cards paid for, and then try this year to reapply for a house. But what I was looking at is I heard y'all talk about co-signing for people, and pretty much all my credit cards will be paid for within probably next week.
Great.
But the problem that I had was I had two strikes on my credit report because I co-signed for people in an apartment. And I was listening to what you were saying about the cell phone. You know, they won't report that to the credit bureau, but they'll report it when you do not pay.
Correct.
And it's pretty hilarious, you know, when you think about it. But what can you do? I don't know how strict the lenders are. I think my biggest problem was the debt ratio. So my credit score was like 660, but I had too much credit.
Okay.
You know, out.
Right. Yeah. So that was really.
How much are they going to look at the fact that I know I can't do anything about the co-signing for the relatives that I co-signed for, but they left the apartment, and unfortunately, that's on my credit report.
Yeah, yeah, that's one of the risks.
Because that'll be a collection, and what you can do in that case, depending on what the amount is, for FHA qualification, they'll take that full collection amount if you're exceeding the limit on collections of over $2,000, they'll take 5% of those collections and apply that as mandatory debt to your monthly income. Or I should say your monthly DTI.
So you're talking about 5% of what I owe that's in debt or the whole thing?
That's in collections. Yeah, that's reported on the credit report.
So they'll only take 5% of it.
Right, and they'll apply that towards your monthly debt.
Okay.
So, and it's not the best way to go about it. What you'd rather do is
paying in full is always better.
Yeah,
because a negotiated payment is still a ding.
It is a ding, but it could reduce if you can provide proof that you're paying, you know, $10 per month instead of them hitting you for $50 per month through a mandatory ding on your FHA loan. It's a better way to do it because that can buy you a lot more home.
Okay, Bye. Debbie?
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for calling. I appreciate your question. Okay, let's go to the next caller, Mott. Mott, you're up next. You're on the air. How you doing tonight?
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah. Hey, this is Matt.
Okay, what's your question?
I don't have a question. I used to be a mortgage broker.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still a real estate broker. I have been for 22 years.
Okay.
And I was listening to, I guess you have a loan officer in there.
Well, Brad is a real estate broker.
Real estate broker. Oh, okay, me too. Yeah, I did a lot of FHA loans and VA loans. Does he do the, well, I don't know if he does the City of Houston grant program. There's a lot of money there. But as far as FHA is concerned, you actually, if you don't have any credit, FHA would look at letters of from your utility bills if you paid them on time.
Yes,
for
they will.
More than 12 months, three of those can actually be put into the credit score system and generate a credit score.
That is true.
Yeah, actually, utility bills can help you start to build credit.
And those are called alternate lines of credit. If somebody has no credit at all, alternate lines of credit can indeed be used.
Yeah,
just as long again as the utility companies or insurance companies that they can and will provide.
Your phone company, even a furniture store, if you bought it on consignment and monthly payments. And
yeah,
stuff,
that's a credit.
In the past, guys that worked at mechanic shops and the Snap-on guy, where they would get tools monthly, 12 months of that would be sufficient as one of the lines of credit. So I've gotten people in houses that basically didn't have anything. They thought they didn't have anything, just didn't know how.
Yeah, and you brought up a great point. Absolutely.
If people think about it, even if they don't habitually use credit, there may still be things they have bought which would be considered credit under certain circumstances. So, yeah, I think that's a really, really important point. We appreciate
it. Even layaway can be used as a line of credit if you've made a little bit of payment on it, let's say for a year or whatever. It can be used, and there's some lenders whoever's underwriting the note will allow them to.
That's interesting. Yeah. How would you document that?
Well, you just bring in the documentation from the from whoever gave you the letter of credit, may it be HLNP or whatever, and they'll send that to the credit bureau, and they can generate a score. I've seen lenders do that, mortgage brokers, not your local bank. And FHA is okay with that. They really can't deny you for no credit, FHA, neither can the VA. You know,
VA I knew, FHA maybe I didn't know that.
Yeah, and another thing, and I just heard this last week, because I still listen to something called TBWS Daily. It's a newscast for mortgage brokers and real estate brokers every day out of California. And if you have a roommate that is paying you rent from the basement, FHA now is considering looking at that as,
income.
As income. Yeah. And any kind of income can be used if you can show it on your tax return that you've been receiving it for at least a minimum of 2 years.
Yes, that's true.
So, again, this goes back to the premise of this show, that if you're a first-time home buyer, you may think that your credit is too poor to buy a house, or you may think that no credit won't allow you to buy a house, and you may not realize the credit that you've already used, which in some circumstances can be helpful to you in terms of setting up a mortgage.
Absolutely. There's lots of different ways.
In the Hispanic community, there's been people that get this home cookware that they purchase from these people that come to their homes.
Yep.
And they pay it on a monthly basis. And I said, ask those people to give you a letter of how much payments you've made in the last 12 months. They'll generate a letter, and they'll put that on the credit report. So there's, you know, several ways of generating credit to help people get into homes, you know.
I appreciate, Matt. I mean, you've given us, I think, a lot of good ideas in terms of not only your specific suggestions, but just kind of thinking outside the box.
Yeah.
Anything you have paid on time is potentially credit.
Before I got started in real estate, my broker said, you can't talk real estate because you're not licensed. So I went and volunteered for Acorn, and one of the branches that Acorn used to have was a housing section. I don't know if they still have it.
They don't have Acorn anymore. The conservatives took care of that for us.
I was trained by an underwriter.
See, that's politics. I did a little politics there.
Hey, I'll talk to you later. I've got some newspaper articles about Acorn and, you know, back when we helped bring down a couple of banks and stuff.
I appreciate your calling, Matt. I think you've given us some really, really good ideas. Take care. All righty, you're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM. My engineer is Egberto Willis. He hasn't said anything tonight, which means either he's not interested or I'm doing a great job. And he has his own show Thursdays at 3 p.m., Politics Done Right. My guest tonight is Brad Stevens, a licensed realtor and real estate broker. And we are talking about first-time home buyers or people that have owned homes previously that are looking to try to get back into the home ownership market and may not know where to begin or may not know how to overcome credit issues that they've had. So we've talked about various lenders, various ways of establishing credit. Actually, we do have a caller, and we do have open lines as well, 713-526-5738. We are taking calls. And Marge, you're on the air. How are you doing tonight?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. So what's your question?
Enjoying the program, and hope I haven't missed this already, but there are a group of young people just out of college who have started this new tech company called rentalkarma.com, and they're helping individuals who pay rent build up their credit scores by getting that reported to the credit bureau.
That's interesting.
I don't know if you know anything about that or if I'm just passing along something, but if you do, would you talk about that, please?
Rental?
I'm going to hang up and listen.
Yeah, can you give that to us one more time?
Rental Karma.
Yes, rentalkarma.com.
And that's rentalkarma?
I believe so, yeah.
Okay, that's interesting. Paying rent is a form of payment on time.
Yeah, because I think that could be.
Yeah, I'm going to hang up and listen.
Okay, appreciate it, Marge.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, if that is true, I think that is a great aspect because if somebody is paying rent on time, I mean, how much closer can you get to something that's a mortgage?
Now, I want to point out that a lot of people live in places that maybe it's just an individual landlord. They don't necessarily make a habit of reporting to credit bureaus. So if you're whether or not you're in an apartment complex or just maybe a home that's the only rental property of a particular landlord, I suppose one thing you can do is get some kind of a letter from them saying, I have a lease, I have paid on time, I have not been late and over such and such, you know, whatever that letter is required to say, and then you can present that to a lender. Even if you have zero credit, you've maybe been paying your rent in cash, but that's still making your rent on time.
Yeah, and that actually is part of mandatory part of the application process is called VOR, or verification of rent. And so they want to make sure that you have been paying rent, as you stated. And also, if you're not paying rent right now, if you're living with family members, friends, sometimes it's advisable to, especially if you're living with family, to still pay rent. Because
and maybe
we
have
had,
a lease.
Yeah, we have had folks who have great credit, great income, but the lender declines them because they call it payment shock. Because you haven't been paying rent, and all of a sudden you have this huge $1,300, $1,500 per month payment, and they see that as high risk. So they'll dump you. Another thank you, Marge, for calling, because rental karma, that reminds me of something called credit karma. This credit karma is a website, and I get so frustrated because folks come to us so excited. I've got a 680 credit score. And then we ask, well, where did you find that? Credit karma. And I just shake my head. And I say, well, we need to verify what your real credit is. Because credit karma, they when you enter your information, they give you an estimate. And nine times out of 10, they're going to give you a higher result than what your true credit score is. And from the three credit bureaus, TransUnion, Experian, Equifax, lenders are going to look at your middle score. They're going to throw out their high, throw out
their
low.
Maybe say those names slower.
TransUnion, Experian, and Equifax. So those are the three major credit bureaus that give you that number.
And I think maybe this would be a good point, and we do have open lines for maybe one or two more callers, 713-526-5738. This might be a good time to talk about the fact that under law, federal law, you are entitled to get one credit report per year for free from each of the credit rating companies. Now, it won't give you your score.
True.
But it will show you all the things on your credit report, things that maybe are incorrect that you would want to dispute, things that maybe you didn't realize were dinging your credit that you can correct or address. So you can go to those. There's a website, annualcreditreport.com. And by the way, I do have a post on my blog, thinkwingradio.com, for tonight's show. And I will be adding a number of these links to the bottom of that post as references, because I've gotten a lot of really good information tonight, so I'm actually kind of excited. Normally, I interview with stuff I already sort of know, and this has been really cool.
And part of our process in educating our clients is providing a full free credit report, and it's accurate, just like any lender is going to see if you go walk into Chase or Wells Fargo. It's the same credit report with the results and, very importantly, the credit scores from all three credit bureaus. And we provide that free to our clients so that we can put the plan of action in place for each individual, because when we see a credit report, it's like their financial DNA.
Well,
and
now
there's so many variables.
When you get the score, that is a ding. Because, I mean, you've actually had to make an application to get that score. Mm-hmm. What you're doing, though, is sharing it with them.
It is. And when folks get a little scared, oh, you're going to pull my – but that's going to hurt it. It's as if you were investing. If you gave me a dime and I said, hey, I'm going to give you the wisdom with this dime to be able to turn it into 50 cents in 6 months, would you do it? I'd hope so.
Well, now we're sounding like an infomercial.
Oh, no.
So send your dimes into Brad. He will send you back a half a buck.
No,
he said on the air. It's got to be true.
True. It is, but it is an investment. I mean, you may take a small hit, but it's for a large gain, you know, in what you're going to learn and the improvements you can make through knowing what's on your credit score.
Now,
that's
at Experian, Experian.com, you can get your own credit report with a score, and I think they charge $17. And, of course, it's better to get it for free than to pay $17. But hypothetically, if you were to go a route like that, does that count as a ding if you're applying for your own credit report at Experian?
No.
So if you're concerned about the ding, for $17, you can get your own credit report with a score from somebody like Experian. That's the only one I have personal experience with, so I know it may be the others as well. And that way it won't count as a ding, especially if you're going to be doing a lot of credit applications because you're maybe shopping for a house, and every place you go for a loan is going to check your credit, and those things start to add up.
They do, but just as long as it's within a 30-day window, you're not going to get dinged multiple times if it's identified as a mortgage company.
But sometimes they will ask you to explain the dings.
They will explain the polls, absolutely. Yeah. And that's simple, a letter of explanation when you're going through the loan process. So, and the dings boil down to usually about 3 points. So on the overall scheme of things, that's not going to be a make or break ding.
And I think one of the things that we need to remember, and I think it's been made very clear, is that the assistance of professionals, particularly when you're not sure about a process, really, really important. You know, I'll give you what sounds like an unrelated example, but I think it's indicative. The first time when I bought my first house in 1978, I had 10 windows. I bought mini blinds. It took me all day to install those 10 mini blinds. When I became a professional window installer, by the time I had done it a couple of years, I could not only install those 10 mini blinds inside of an hour and a half, but that would include opening up the boxes, laying out the hardware, installing the blinds, cleaning up the trash, and putting the trash outside. And I could now do all of that in an hour and a half instead of all day. When you talk about real estate, going to people who know the market, going to people who understand the hoops you have to go through, knowing people who can help you find a house or a property within your means that also serves your needs and your desires.
Mm-hmm.
A professional can just do that so much easier than you can. You still make the final decisions. A good professional will ask you questions in order to learn what it is you need versus what it is you want and how to tell the difference. And all of these things go into that process. Getting the loan, a realtor will be able to give you some hints on what you have to do to prepare when the lender asks you a question, how you need to answer that question honestly but best.
And everybody, please make sure you've done your taxes.
Please make sure you've done your taxes. and by the way, if you have a tax extension, they don't really love that, but you know, mm-hmm. you can work with it, but they don't love it.
Yeah.
Let's see. I guess we're about done. Do we have a caller coming in? We'll have to be quick. No. Okay.
I'll take a few seconds, Mike. Yeah. I just want to thank you for inviting me on the show, and you know, all your shows, you have a slant of this making people think and getting that little hamster wheel turning in the skulls of folks. It's not you getting on your soapbox and just shouting and screaming your own agenda, and that's something that I appreciate, and hopefully that the community greatly appreciates, because we need more of that in media, a whole lot more of that.
I appreciate that, Brad. And I will give you your last plug for the night. I have been talking to Brad Stevens, a licensed realtor and real estate broker. His website is newhomeprograms.com. And again, I have a link for that on tonight's show announcement. ThinkWingRadio.com or ThinkWing.org is where you can find the information. Everybody, have a great week. Have a great night. Thank you for the callers. Thank you for paying attention to the show. And if you would like more on this, write me an email. Let me know. We'll schedule it again. Remember, if your vote didn't matter, they wouldn't try so hard to suppress it. Take care.
Harris County District Clerk. Firefighters head into burning buildings while everyone heads out. Police officers put on protective vests each day at work. Members of the military are stationed in harm's way. What do they all have in common? They serve when called upon. Everyday folks like yourselves are called upon to occasionally perform a different role, jury service. A key principle of our nation is that our Constitution guarantees the right to be tried by the impartial jury. The Founding Fathers wisely understood that questions of liberty ought to rest with average citizens, not the government or one official. With people like you and your neighbors on juries, justice can be done. In a big city, you can easily start thinking, I'll just let the other guy across town go in for jury service. Nobody will miss me if I don't come. But here in Texas, we expect people to pull their own weight. When you get tapped on the shoulder, please honor the call to jury service. My name is Chris Daniel, your Harris County District Clerk, and I look forward to seeing you at the courthouse.
This is KPFT Houston.
Many companies will match gifts made to nonprofit organizations. A matching gift from your company will help KPFT preserve independent music, arts, news, and views for generations to enjoy. Just make a gift to KPFT this hour at kpft.org. Then contact your human resources office for eligibility requirements and to obtain a matching gift form. Many companies match the gifts of retirees, spouses, and surviving spouses, too. Just fill out the employee portion of the form completely and send the form to KPFT, Attention Matching Gifts, 419 Levitt Boulevard, Houston, Texas, 77006. Your gift to KPFT could double if your company has a matching gift program. Your help makes a difference. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, KPFT.